your work life, all of our work lives. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
A surprising number of proverbs that maybe are not only oldies but should have become moldies still are part not only of our lexicon but of our daily usage. And I thought it was about time that, you know, everything else would be deconstructed, that I would deconstruct some of the proverbs that are work-related and then invite you to call and tell me if you think those time-honored, if you will, perhaps honored, time-honored, yes, they certainly were. They've been honored by the fact that they've been written hundreds of years ago and still are alive, whether those time-honored proverbs are worth keeping or whether I'm right and they should go in the dung heap. I'll also share some that I think are good. I don't mean to just be critical. But without further ado, I'm going to do one and then we'll go and I'll invite you to call. So a work-related proverb is, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all. Wrong. Feedback, if tactfully dispensed, is critical to growth. Or I'll do a few, I guess. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Wrong. Even top-performing people and products can and should strive for improvement, right? I'll do some more. I guess I need to do a few of these before I go to the phones. Okay. All good things must come to an end. And it's got a variant. What goes up must come down. Wrong. If anything, things that go well tend to continue. Or conversely, as Warren Buffett said, turnarounds don't turn. If, for example, your career is going well or you've had an improvement, ask yourself, what's making this work and keep doing more of it, right? So I think that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to just repeat those three, and then I'm going to invite you to call in and say if you agree or with the proverb or agree with my deconstruction. The first one was, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all. I think that's wrong, that you need feedback. I mean, feedback is critical to our growth. Okay, second time-honored proverb, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Wrong, I think. Even if people who are really A players and great products should be trying to be improved. And as I said, as conversely, as Warren Buffett said, turnarounds don't turn. So if your career is doing well, you want to keep it going. And you can simply say, okay, what have I done differently these days? What am I doing? Should I do more of? So all good things needn't come to an end. Okay, I think this is a good time to give the phone number out. So, if you want to either defend the proverb as stated or my deconstruction of it, I invite you to call here at Work with Marty Nemko and KALW, but you can always call, and this is a good time to do it as well. If you have a work-related problem of any sort, you're either unemployed or you are well-employed and still unhappy, or you're having a problem with a coworker, with a boss, with the dilemma, something in your personal life is interfering, or you want me to play Shark Tank with you, running a business and you're not sure it's good, you want me to ask the hard questions, maybe give you some ideas on how you could improve it, or like Kevin O'Leary says on Shark Tank, you're just a little cockroach and it deserves to be stepped on. I won't be quite that mean, but you'll get a straight answer from me. Those are all good reasons to call Work with Marty Nemko and KALW. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I know a lot of you are still in your cars. With the commute at getting ever work, you may have finished work at 6, but it's now 7, and you're probably very likely still in your car, alas. So you can make maybe the traffic feel a little less onerous if you call in and time will go faster. Like I just on the way here, it took me an hour and a half to get here from Oakland, but I had a great conversation with an old friend, so the time went by a lot faster. Anyway, so, okay, some more of these proverbs I think are yuckos that deserve deconstruction. If at first you don't succeed, try again. Wrong! The wise person assesses, case by case, whether to persist, to tweak what you're doing, or change. Or as country singer Kenny Rogers more folksily put it, you gotta know when to hold them, know when to fold them, and know when to walk away. Another proverb I think that is bad and due for the dung heap is, good things come to those who wait. That leaves too much to chance. You're going to likely be left with what no one else wants. You want to follow that sort of maxim, and it's wiser to live by the aforementioned, or not the aforementioned, I haven't mentioned it yet, but the early bird gets the worm. Generally, it's true, at least especially in our fast-paced Bay Area modern-day life. All right, now I should share some good ones. These are things that I believe are worthy they still have legitimate implications for our work life today. A journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. The modern-day version of that, of course, is baby steps. It's probably the most valuable self-help tip. After all of these years and all I've read and frankly written a lot, and by the way, my new 11th book, the flagship career book in the Dummies series, Careers for Dummies, is out today. Today it was published. Still, after 11 books, it still feels like I just got my box of books, and I opened it up, and it's after working on it for 2 years and then seeing it, that yellow and black cover, it still feels terrific. Anyway, okay, so yes, of all the stuff I've read and written, it probably really is true that in the end it's deceptively simple. That, yes, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step, and yes, the modern version of that is baby steps. Why? Because if you can't get overwhelmed if you take a baby step. If you just look at the whole mountain, it just feels overwhelming. It's too tempting to procrastinate. Here's another proverb that I think deserves its being time-honored, that stood the test of time, and that is, knowledge is power. Yeah, my clients generally found that while networking and looks can get you in the door, except for low-level jobs, competence more often gets you the job, and it more often keeps you employed, and more often keeps your career in an upward trajectory. So, yeah, knowledge really is power, especially, you know, in today's information age. Another one that I think is worthy, another proverb, a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing. That's right. Some people, frankly, have self-esteem that's higher than their expertise justifies. They have this little bit of knowledge, and they feel that makes them an expert. It's like somebody who's been to school, they think they know about education reform. Or they've had a few anecdotal experiences with a certain type of person or whatever, and they think that's all they need to know. Or they watch the mainstream media, you know, give us, you know, a 3-minute pitch about some issue that they want to push, and they think that's the answer. So I really do think that that's a legitimate proverb. A little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing because it's more likely to yield complacency. Next, this is another good one. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. That is right. There are many reasons why someone might not follow your suggestion. They may believe, if only unconsciously, that your suggestion is wrong. Or other times, they may have an irrational fear that only sometimes can be successfully addressed. Remember, you know, shrinks, therapists, can very often work with trying to get people to overcome their clients to overcome their irrational fears for years, and only sometimes does it. Are you going to be able to really, you know, overcome some of those? There are other times, I think about some of my career counseling clients. They're occasional, it's not that often, but occasionally, my career counseling clients are going to find a reason to say no to every career idea. And then when I probe and really find out whether they're really objecting, they really don't want to work. They don't want a job. For example, their lawyer, they're in a divorce, and their lawyer tells them you need to show that you're trying to look for work. Well, in any case, whether you're a counselor or not, the art is in realizing when to persist in encouraging someone to change and when to let go. That's true whether you're a boss or a coworker, romantic partner, whatever. So before I do any more, I'm going to reiterate these and give out the phone number again. So I'm going to simply tick off the ones I think are bad, these proverbs that are work-related that I think are bad. If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. Ridiculous. Feedback is critical, in my mind. Two, another one, if all good things must come to an end. Ridiculous. When things are going well, that you want to do more of it and see how you can keep it going. If at first you don't succeed, try again. Foolish. Sometimes you got to know when to cut your losses, change careers, or change your investments, or whatever. I remember as a young man, I was a pianist, and I was making good money. And I bought this stock, and it kept going down, down, down. And I said, well, it's only 40. I know I paid 80, but it'll come back. Well, it was worth 20. you know, they say in investments, never catch a falling knife. And that's also true in the work world. If at first you don't succeed, you may want to quit or move to another direction. Good things come to those who wait. Yeah, occasionally being prematurely aggressive is a mistake, but generally, People fail much more often from procrastination and inaction than being more aggressive, as in the proverb, the early bird gets the worm. And now, again, moving to reiterating the proverbs I think are worthy related to work. Journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. Absolutely. Baby steps. Knowledge is power. Yep. Especially in this information age. You can lead a horse to water, but can't make him drink. Absolutely. There is, there's many reasons why somebody might not follow your advice. Maybe they're right. Maybe they're just not ready to make that to do what you want. There's a right time and a wrong time. And the wise manager especially doesn't spend disproportionate amounts of time trying to force people to do that which they're not willing to do. You got to know when, you got to pick your battles, another one of those cliches. Give out the phone number again. So do you agree with my deconstruction of these work-related proverbs, the ones I support and the ones that I think are misguided? The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And as I said, you can always call, not just to respond to that, but probably the core purpose of this show is to help you with your work life. Everybody, and I have clients who are just starting out, and I have clients who are highly successful, but there's still plenty who are quite unhappy. And there is much that we can solve, and sometimes we can solve things, at least give you a baby step, sometimes a giant step, very quickly, right here on the radio, because I've been doing this. I've had 5,400 clients doing this radio show 28 and a half years. So phone number again, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, my name is Andrew Kim, by the way. I wanted to, I don't want to say dispute, but at a point in context of one of the parables that you thought were outdated and were not as relevant, what you mentioned on, good things happen for those who are patient.
Right, good things will come to those who wait.
Yeah, and I think it's just all in the context of perspective of how you wait, right? So I think if you're waiting, completely, without any action, then I totally agree. But if you're waiting because part of, part of the compound of knowledge and of all of the work you're doing requires resilience, requires patience, requires, time, right, for it to really grow. Like, for example, I worked on a project that took me 3 years for it to be successful. I almost quit the first year. I almost did not wait. And I feel like because I was able to wait when I know a lot of my peers weren't able to wait, I thought that was very important for my personal growth and professional growth. So I just wanted to add that perspective.
I'm delighted that you called because, of course, to every rule there are exceptions. But I imagine if we put into a room 1,000 people who worked for a year on a project and almost everybody says you should scrap it and you chose to wait 2 more years and those 100 people waited 2 more years, I would imagine that this large majority of them would have felt that the 2 years of waiting was ill-spent, especially if they could have been working on something else. I'm thinking that your experience was not the most common one. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. I see your perspective.
And I see yours.
And I also think you see my perspective.
I do. I'm delighted that you called, Andrew. Thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
Okay.
All right, take care and be well.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, so I love when people disagree respectfully. It's great. I mean, that's what good talk radio is about. It's not about agreeing with the host. It's about sometimes disagreeing, sometimes amplifying. So if you agree or disagree with my deconstruction of these proverbs, I welcome your call. And if you've got a work problem, you want me to try to help you solve it, the price is right, zero. This is my pro bono work here at KALW. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I had mentioned earlier one of the proverbs that I do like is that generally, contrary to what the caller was saying, in general, with exceptions, and that's why I'm glad the caller called, the early bird catches the worm. And the variance, if you snooze, you lose, or strike while the iron is hot, or never put off till tomorrow what you can do today, I agree with that. A key differentiating factor between my successful clients and my unsuccessful clients is that most of the successful ones procrastinate little. I like to tell this story. I give a lot of talks, and another part of my pro bono work is I talk to groups of unemployed people. You know, through there, the state of California has these things called Experience Unlimited and Marin Pros and whatever. And when I talk to them and I ask them, raise your hand if you consider yourself a procrastinator, roughly 80 to 90% of the people raise their hand. But I also am privileged to get to talk with some pretty heavy hitters, like I'm going to be part of the Stanford Distinguished Speaker Series in the fall. And there, when I talk to a group like that, only about 15%, maybe 20% raise their hand. So it really is critical that proverb that you really do need to manage at least your procrastination. Those proverbs of the early bird catches the worm. If you snooze, you lose. Strike while the iron's hot. Never put off tomorrow until you can do today is pretty darn accurate. I mean, we all like to procrastinate at times. I'm working on the table of contents for my next book, and it's got 300. It's a book of poetry. It's got 375 poems. Trying to put those into an order is laborious and hard, and I've been procrastinating like crazy. So I understand. But it really is a career killer. Anyway, we've got plenty of calls on the line, so let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so glad I got through to you.
Cool.
I am having a work issue. I just started a job about 3 months ago, and I've been working very hard. But the Salesforce administrator, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Salesforce.com, The Salesforce administrator has a bit of a reputation for having a very short temper.
Mm.
And apparently I got on her bad side.
Uh-oh.
And I'm not sure if you know anything about Salesforce administrators, but they have a ton of power in companies.
Right.
A ton. And
they're
usually not the nicest people.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm a really nice person, but apparently I rubbed her the wrong way.
You sound like a very, you know, your vibe is so positive and kind.
Oh, thank you.
You seem like a
thank
really
you. That
nice
means
person.
So much.
Why, if she were on the phone, what would she say? Why is she annoyed at you?
You know, I had a lot of one-off issues with some clients when I first started, so I needed a lot of help from her.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe she thought I was too needy. So she complained to my VP that I was not nice.
What?
And, yes, and my VP, she didn't even ask me for my side of the story.
Oh, no.
She just got on a call with me and said, you know, I've heard that you're not a nice person.
Jesus.
We don't accept that here. And I'm thinking to myself, like, wow. So, you know, I know that I'm a cool person. You know, I know that I know how to treat people the right way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like a more major code, you know, for me that I live by.
I can feel
it. But my question to you is, I mean, do you think I can even recover from this?
I do.
We're talking about 3 months in.
Yep.
And it's like, geez, man, that's a big blow, you know.
No guarantees, but I believe in resets. And this may sound crazy, and nothing works all the time. But you know what is the greatest way to play for most people to press reset? To go out for lunch or go out for a drink and talk and try to bond and radical, I use this phrase a lot, radical honesty. What's this person's first name? I don't want to know her last name at all. What's her first name?
Her name is Heather.
Heather. Heather, I know we've kind of gotten off on the wrong foot. Would you kill me if I asked you to come out to lunch with me or let's go out for a drink after work? I'd love to talk with you, or at least let's sit in the break room. Yeah, because doing an offsite, getting away from the formality of all of that, and showing that kind, the same human being you reveal. Some people have a gift, and I don't have it, of being instantly likable. But you are instantly likable. The excitement you expressed in being on the air, that says to me that you have the gift of being a really nice person. So there's a tremendous irony in her the VP thinking you're not a nice person. You may have weaknesses, but I would bet that not being a nice person is not one of them.
Yeah.
We all have said things that have been taken the wrong way. You may have screwed up once or twice, but I don't think constitutionally you're mean. Is that fair to say?
I hope so. I think so.
Right. So I would, in a very nice, non-threatening way, by saying, I think I got off on, don't say we got off on the wrong foot. I think I got off on the wrong foot. I've made a couple of one-off mistakes. I wonder if we could chat a bit. I'd love to take you out to lunch or a drink. Or maybe let's go for a hike after work or whatever. And
I like it.
Right? And bond. In the way, frankly, that women do much better than men. Bond on the human basis.
Mm-hmm.
whatever it is that we all have a different hot buttons. For some of it's the work is the bottom line. For some it's money. Some of it's our looks. Some of it's sexuality. Some of it's politics, Donald Trump. Some of it is health, mental health, depression, children wanting to get pregnant, wanting to get married. You know, all of those things potentially are sources of bonds that you need to have your antenna out at that meeting to see if you can bond on one of those issues. And somehow all of the other stuff, it becomes like a lubricant that insulates away from a lot of the rancor. There ain't no guarantees in life, but that's something that doesn't have a lot of downside. What's your honest reaction to that?
I am afraid that she's like a cold shell with no heart.
Okay.
And I think that it, I think I would give it a try. But I think that she's pretty all about business.
Don't be afraid then. Don't be afraid to push back. Should you just write her a nice note, a handwritten note? Should you talk all business, talk about a business, say, I want to work a fact. You know, we can go the other way around. We can, you know, meet with her and say, you know, I really love this job. I feel I screwed up a little bit. I feel like I'm in the doghouse. I would love to do a great job for you. What can I do to improve? I mean, you can be no nonsense like that. Would you rather do that?
That might be the approach to go. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Don't be you immediately agreed with me my first suggestion because you were a nice person. But sometimes it's wise to tactfully disagree. So saying, Marty, I just, like you said, I don't think with this woman that's going to work. She's all business. Great. That kind of clear, crisp communication with me and your boss and your clients is often a way where it's really, you're not perceived as super sweet, but it's ultimately the kindest thing to do because you're being real clear and straight instead of all the BS and beating around the bush that goes on. So maybe in this case, just have a crisp conversation with her that doesn't make her feel defensive and see if that gets you to press reset. Does that make sense?
Yes, and thank you so much for listening. I just found your show, but I will definitely be listening again and again.
Awesome.
Thank you.
I'm really glad. Thanks so much for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, let's go back to the phone. I'll give out the phone number, though. You had a work-related problem or you want to comment on one of my deconstructions of the Proverbs, you can call the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Or what's on your mind? Hi, it's you. Hello?
Hi. Hi, Marty. This is Fernando. Thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Fernando.
And I just wanted to focus on the proverb that you mentioned, that you can lead a horse to water, but you cannot make him drink. And one of the things that it reminded me of, and I just wanted to amplify it a little bit, was that sometimes people will make a change in their life either from inspiration or desperation. And that's been for me a lifelong journey, really, to move away from having to move to a better place in my life from it being desperation, you know, and really trying to think, oh, you know what, I'm inspired by what this person is doing. I can do that as well, and trying to move there. And also one of the things that I thought about when you mentioned that proverb was that sometimes it isn't that people necessarily resist change itself. It's just rather they resist being changed when they're not ready.
Exactly. There's a right time. So, Fernando, I'm interested in you, of course. If you were to draw on either your internal inspiration or an external inspiration, what should you do now that would improve your life?
I mean, one of the things that I am doing now that I wasn't doing before is exercising more, right? I think I've had this, I get busy and then I'm an entrepreneur,
right.
And then I'll get really, you know, just intense in terms of projects that I have coming up, and I'll just stop, right?
Yep.
And so really staying committed to that has been a challenge in the past, and I'm just trying to find inner inspiration by, you know, doing a challenge where I exercise every day, and I've committed to it so far for 21 days.
Wow.
So, yeah, it hasn't been easy, but I feel really good, a lot of awesome energy, and, you know, hopefully that inspires somebody else, you know, instead of having to come from a place of desperation, right?
I'd like to do a little brain dump. of how I deal with exercise. I work like 70 hours a week, but, you know, I am sobered by the phrase that sitting is the new smoking. And that if you're sitting, I mean, I unfortunately, I've known people who die of cancer, and it ain't fun. And and heart attacks and strokes and being on a gurney and all that crap. So I make a point of saying I care about my own body enough, and for some people it's I care about my family enough, that I am not going to sit all the time. And I make it pretty much a rule. I'm not rigid, but usually every hour I make a point of looking for an opportunity to get up and walk, garden, hike with the dog. If you're working in a workplace, find a steep hill and walk up it or run up it or go up and down the stairs in the building for 5 minutes so that you are not a slave to money. You will probably make more money. And it's nothing odious. I happen to work at home, so I love gardening and digging deep into the soil. I love hiking with my doggie. And I live in a hilly area. Mm-hmm. We just take a quick, you know, hike around my block. It's very steep, and then once a day, every day, it's a ritual. I hike for 45 minutes. Now, why do I do that? Because it's not annoying for me. I would hate to lift weights. I would not go to the gym. It's a pain in the butt. But I do the kind of exercise that I find enjoyable, and because I am a workaholic, I am always bringing a work project with me when I hike. On that 45-minute walk, I'm thinking about my next article, what I'm going to do on the next radio show, what I'm going to do with my next client. I read the new client questionnaire so that I can be as workaholic as I want while still being good to my body. Is there anything in that brain dump that I just did that might be relevant to you, Fernando?
I really, what comes up for me is something that we don't generally talk about where by doing exercise in those acts where we make time to exercise, and even if you are, you know, focusing on your work, what we're doing is we're putting ourselves first.
Right.
And a lot of times we feel when we put ourselves first that it's a selfish act, but in reality, by you taking care of yourself, it's a selfless act because you get to not just show up, but show up at awesome levels with a lot of energy and positivity and enthusiasm.
Right, and you reduce stress. You know, I make a point of getting up, particularly when I'm feeling myself getting stressed. That's when I particularly take the time. So I'm better with my next client, better with my wife, you know, and better to myself. Right. And because God forbid if I did get sick, now my wife's got to stop her life to take care of me. So I'm thinking it is totally not selfish. It's one of those wonderful ways that I can be taking care of myself and not hurting anybody else. It's not like I'm stealing anybody's money. It's not like I'm stepping on somebody to get to a promotion. This is a win-win for the whole world. I don't feel exercise is not selfish. I feel it's right. Not being crazy. I mean, I do think that triathletes who are exercising 2 or 3 hours a day, there's no evidence that that's medically healthy at all. But doing these little 5-minute vigorous hikes or you know, 45 minutes a day of walking, there's no downside to that in my judgment. What do you think?
I agree with you on that one, Marty. And I think any movement in our, you know, new sedentary lifestyle is better than no movement.
Bingo. Even old people, you know, when they're in their 70s, when they're in their 80s, they're told, you know, no, you're not going to be doing triathlons, but walk, get up, even if you just walk around the house. Right. Some movement is better than no movement. Fernando, I'm really glad you called Work with Marty Nemco.
Awesome, Marty. Thank you so much. Have a good one.
Take care. Okay, got lots of lines lighted up. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hello? It's you. Hi.
Hi. I have a question for you with two parts.
Great.
I got an invitation to my boss's birthday party, mm-hmm. and it also has a line in the invitation that says, you know, no gifts are required. And so I was wondering, do I go? And if I do, should I take his word on that, or do I still give a gift anyway?
Or is it no gifts required? I would
or don't feel obligated, yeah.
Yeah. I would not obligate. I would definitely give a gift. I wouldn't go overboard. You don't want to be giving a gift that's too large that makes it look like you're sucking up. But I would bring, you know, do you know your boss well enough to know what would be emotionally gratifying? What's a personal interest of the boss's? What's something, you know, in the $10 to $20 range? I'm not, or, you know.
Okay.
You know, something, but better to do that. And with you know, it really is the card that counts. So I'd get a $10 to $20 gift that was really, don't get him a gift card. Do not get him a gift card to Starbucks or whatever. No, it's too impersonal. But what does he? What is your boss like, personally?
I'd say working out is a thing that he enjoys.
Okay. Tell me some more. How about a how about a cool workout T-shirt that maybe you even, you know, it's so easy to get a customized T-shirt these days that has your workplace's logo on it or something, some cool, you know, something like that?
Possibly.
See, a T-shirt is exactly the right level. You know, that's going to cost $15, $20, customized $20. And if it can, you know, have the name of the company or the slogan or something fun, maybe even something funny that's a little parody of the company that maybe he wouldn't wear at work, but he would laugh at. Depends on his personality.
Okay.
Where do you work? Can you tell me where you work?
Oh, I work at a printer company.
Oh, a printer as in printing magazines, things like that?
Oh, no, printing on, it's a small company, printing on test tubes.
Printing on test tubes. So yeah. If you could find some pun about test tubes that was funny, Google it. Go to Google test tube jokes. You can find anything. If you could find one and put that on the T-shirt, I think you got a big win. And if the birthday party's coming up too soon, you know, normally I would do that like at Zazzle or Cafe Press. You do it online. But if you, there are places like locally that will do custom while you wait T-shirt printing. And so if it's coming up right away, I would just, and think about what color he'd look good in. And, you know, and then you've got a real killer present without looking like you're sucking up.
Okay.
I love your call. That was a really interesting, unusual call, and I just loved it. Thanks so much for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to the Work with Marty Nemco. What's on your mind? Hi.
Hi, I'm not sure if it's me.
It is you.
Mm-hmm. It is me.
Hi. But I think we lost you. Okay, so we had a little technical difficulty there, but if you call right back, we should be able to get you right back on. No problem. Just give a call, phone number, and you, the woman I was just on the phone with, or anybody else, if you've got a work-related problem or you want to comment on the proverbs that I was deconstructing, work-related proverbs, the phone number here at KELW and Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I'm almost done with these proverbs, but I've got one more. This one I've got to talk about in terms of deconstructing the proverbs that is relevant to what the previous caller is. And this one is another one I do agree with, which is early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. That was an old Ben Franklin, you know, proverb. Why is that true? Well, one reason might be that if we're staying up late too often, it usually involves maybe alcohol, substance, or an all-night sex thing or whatever. We're less likely to do that early in the morning, and so we're more likely to be healthier, productive, and becoming wise, or at least knowledgeable. So those are 10 proverbs, 5 of which I deconstructed and I thought should go into the dustbin, and 5 of which I thought... are worthy of their longevity. So let's go right back to the phones. Hopefully that woman is back with us. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. Is it you?
I hope so.
Yes, indeed. Good. Glad to have you back.
Hey, I am calling primarily to express my thanks for your guidance. I am an early career psychologist.
And I'm sure glad you called back. My God. Okay. Go ahead.
And I would really love your take on the state of the field. I think that we're coming into a period where we're going to have a real crisis for doctoral level licensed psychologists. What your feeling is on that, how prohibitive the process to becoming licensed has become.
Right.
And to just really express my gratitude for you as a resource. I recently landed a new position where I'm going to be able to get the rest of my clinical supervised hours at a living wage.
I'm delighted. Here are my thoughts. I have a PhD in educational psychology, and so I'm in a little bit of a good position to talk about this, not so much in terms of, mainly in terms of, is the time the best spent? The older I get, the more obsessed I am with integrity. And I believe that the PhD is more a testimony to perseverance and the piece of paper than what you could have been learning in another context, because so much of what you learn is theoretical. I had to take 6 5-unit graduate-level statistics courses to get my PhD in educational psychology because a very powerful professor, now dead, had so much, he wanted to teach his abstruse courses, and so we were all forced to take this crap. I really think that while indeed to be a, quote, doctoral-level clinical psychologist may indeed, if only because of supply and demand, require a doctorate and then, of course, a zillion supervised hours, I would rather focus on the substance. And my way of doing that would be to upfront identify a niche that was really important to me and that I felt I had the gift of helping. If I was as a teenager, I had an eating disorder, I might understand eating disorders better than almost anybody else. And I would do a deep dive into that from a practical, not theoretical perspective. I would be mentoring with the finest eating disorders teams, because these days it takes people use a team to address that. I'd be reading about that. I'd be going to those conferences. I'd be writing about that. I'd be giving talks. So that every time I looked a client, a patient in the eye, I believe I could have a better chance of helping him or her, even if I didn't have the PhD, in fact, more than if I had the PhD. So my view is that in the end, we should worry less about the market and whether the market is tight, and we should make our choices based on what's going to enable us, forgive the Buddhist word, to be have right livelihood, to do the best damn job. Because the truth is, in the field of psychology, it's still an art more than a science. So get as much practical knowledge from those people who are the artisans, who really know how to unearth people's problems and help them move forward. And very often that is not Professor Hassenpfeffer, whether it be at Stanford or Berkeley or anywhere else. What's your reaction to what I just said?
Oh, it could not resonate more deeply with me, particularly with what you said about right livelihood, because the funny thing that happened to me on my way to becoming a scientist in the field of psychology was my spiritual practice really deepened. And I can't agree more about finding a niche. If I had it to do over again, I would have taken a very different professional route, because the clinical supervision has just been such a prohibitive process. Mm-hmm. But once you get invested to a certain point,
sure, right,
you got to follow through. And so the other question that I would leave you with is the niche that I have stumbled upon. I'm wondering if you are following it all. The coming revolution, they're saying, in treatment that combines certain pharmacotherapies with treatment, and particularly the work of the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies.
Exactly. Yes, I'm very much aware of that. It's still too preliminary. Anybody for me to embrace or reject it would be premature. I'd be following it. I don't know enough to know whether it's ready for prime time in clinical, but certainly that is a niche that is being seriously, not just on the fringes, but has been seriously discussed, the use of mushrooms, the use of LSD, et cetera, under carefully supervised conditions, et cetera. I wouldn't reject it at all, and it's certainly, you're right, it's up and coming. How big it's going to be, I'm not a guy who wants to be on the cutting edge, because too often it's the bleeding edge. But I'd be monitoring it, and if I felt when the data was looking good enough, I might indeed do a deeper dive into it and make that a niche that would be a practice of mine. Absolutely.
Well, the research coming out of NYU and Johns Hopkins is in the third stage of clinical trials. Mm-hmm. So it is anticipated that it will be prescribed by 2020.
I believe that. Remember, you know, there is such pressure, especially at the research universities, to publish. So they want to publish positive results. So often, a medical drug is approved after FDA approval and then gets pulled for the market because of side effects, lack of efficacy, because there is conscious or unconscious bias on the part of the investigators. So just because a study or four says yes, I'm not so, it's just my personality. I'm not a late adopter, but I'm not an early adopter either. I feel like I'm playing with people's lives, and I'd be pretty careful to see replication. One of the, there was a recent, what called a meta-evaluation of studies in the American Psychological Association that found that most studies don't get replicated. And if they do, they don't find the same finding as the original investigator. Because that original investigator gains a lot. His career gets boosted. His chance or her chance of an NIH, another NIH grant, depends on his finding positive results. So I'm not the guy who's going to jump on the bandwagon first. I'm not going to be the guy who jumps on the bandwagon last. But this is an area, when there is authoritative, some good data that's supporting it, I am certainly watching it. And then it's a subjective judgment call. When my gut tells me the preponderance of the evidence says that there's the risk-reward ratio of trying it with this particular patient or this category of patient is worth it, then I'll do it. But I'm at the very interested but not ready to act, not ready to pull the trigger phase. That's just me. But everybody's got to make their own, you know, calculus about this. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes. I am being hyper-conservative about it.
Cool. Well, anyway, I really appreciate your call. Very interesting questions, and I'm glad you like the advice I've been given.
Thank you for your work, Marty.
Absolutely, it's a privilege to do it. Believe me, I do not take it for granted. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye. Okay, we got so many lines. I do want to prioritize you. We got all these lines lighted up, so let's go back to the phones. Well, I've got much more I want to share with you, but I got to take a couple more calls, and then I'll share some other stuff. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind,
Marty?
Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much. That was interesting. I just saw on the news, and I don't know how this got by me, a mother from Guatemala with a very young child, like an infant, who was deported back to Guatemala. The infant remains here, and I find that this kind of thing has been going on for more than a month now.
Mm-hmm.
So I want my job, I want to make it my career, mm-hmm. my dedication mm-hmm. to locate those kind of children. They have to be identified, located, and reunited.
Yeah.
This is no joke. Well,
certainly,
I mean,
the idea,
talking,
right. Certainly the idea,
yeah.
Du jour. You know, there is...
What would be your first step if you were going to try to pursue this out of the blue?
Well, you're in the right place. You know, in this very large earth of ours, the Bay Area is the epicenter for those kind of advocacy organizations. There are an infinite number of immigration advocacy organizations. I would take, you know, because commuting is impossible, I would look, what city do you live in?
Brisbane.
I'd be looking in, you know, in on the peninsula, and I'd look for, or in San Francisco, or Daly City, all the nonprofits that are immigration support groups, and find out somewhere within there, there is going to be some other little known entity that's doing this. And then I would try to make clear to them what you bring to the table, because passion is one thing, but it's not enough.
That's the problem.
right. Passion is, you know, it's like when I watch Shark Tank, you have these idiots who are, you know, try to get the hundreds of thousands of dollars in investments, and their explanation, well, I have a lot of passion. Well, you know, passion doesn't solve problems by itself. Skills.
That's right.
So you have to look at what is it you bring to the table. Is it your management skills? Is it your writing skills? Is it your quantitative skills? Is it computer skills? Is it your customer service skills? Whatever it is, you've got to inventory your past to identify two or three things you bring to, or, you know, I don't know, as far as I know, you could be a lawyer or a doctor, whatever it is, but the two or three things you bring to the table that could be most of help. So if you are really good at doing internet research to dig up information that would help find where these kids are, or you are somebody who's just going to, don't mind making a little money, but being the worker bee who's going to go down down below San Diego and search out places and talk, you speak Spanish and you're talking to all the people locally who are terrified, think about what you could do that would specifically, beyond passion, enable you to add something, and then contact all these nonprofits. And as one of my favorite rules is, ask for what you want, and when they say no, ask somebody else. And if you do that enough times, here, especially in the Bay Area, with these kind of immigrant nonprofit advocacy groups, I'm betting you will find a place, especially since this is the topic du jour now. It's finally something that it seems to me what the immigration reform advocates have been looking for, something that pulls the heartstrings. Well, this is on the news constantly, so I think you've got the right time.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. Yep.
Thank you, Marty.
Okay, back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hi, is it Steve's turn?
Hello, it is your turn.
Hi, my name's Steve. I've been unemployed for almost 2 years now.
Okay.
I used to work in IT, and I was getting pretty specialized. So I'm finding it a bit difficult to get back in because that branch of professionalism changes pretty rapidly.
I know. It's true.
So what was your niche? Figure out if there's some sort of strategy that I can apply there.
Now, is it clear in your mind that you either want to go back in IT, perhaps with some retraining, retooling, or changing your niche, or do you want to get out of IT?
I feel pretty comfortable with that, with IT.
Okay.
The thing is that my specialty has been disaster recovery, and there's not a lot of medium-sized companies that see a need for it, although if you ask me, they do need it, but they just don't see it themselves. So meanwhile, however, you know, new technology pops up in the arena, so I do start to fall behind because my hands aren't on the steering wheel for the last couple of years, but you know, I'm not adverse to adding something to it.
Right. So I have two thoughts. First of all, it's like in the world of real estate. It seems like everybody who wants to become a real estate agent just goes and does residential because it's not scary. What would be really scary would be data recovery for very complex arrays of large computers, supercomputers, whatever. And that may be scary, but that's an indispensable thing, whether you're working for government or huge banks or the World Bank or... have you thought about trying to up your game?
So, in fact, Marty, that's where I come from. I used to work in the UN, and that doesn't scare me at all.
Good. And so how is it that because obviously I don't know a lot about that little niche. How is it that there is no market for that anymore?
Well, I think there is a market for it. However, it's just that the market is unknown by the people who need to buy it.
Okay. There's two choices then. So if you're not the sales guy, you sound like you're not, but unable to convince them of doing that.
That's a weakness of my game. Yeah.
Fine. So are there consulting firms that are very high quality that specialize? They have sales guys and women who go out and convince large entities that they need a data recovery system or a person or whatever the hell it is. Do you need to find the right entity to be a worker before them?
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay, so your homework is to identify three the most reputable firms that do, and it may not be 100% of their business disaster recovery. They could be doing some cybersecurity. They could be doing complex remote installations across platforms. Who knows what they're doing?
Yes, typically what happens there. Yeah,
exactly. But finding a firm that at least has a niche, one of the things that they do is disaster recovery. And maybe even before you do that, if you feel, you know, you said your hands have been off the wheel for a while, why don't you either do some self-study or take an online course or an online cert in something that is the state of the art, so that now you become a very desirable guy, and then with that under your belt, you've been unemployed over 2 years. Take 2 or 3 months to get that cert, then go to these top three consulting firms. Now you're bringing so much to the table, and you're not having to market yourself. What do you think about that?
That makes a great deal of sense, Marty.
I appreciate you calling Work with Marty Nemco.
Thanks.
You take care.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, I promised that in the promo for the week that not only was I going to deconstruct some work-related proverbs, but I was going to, you know, while we're in this kind of proverb is only a little pivot away from poem, I've been writing some poems. In fact, my book is, I've got a book of 375 poems coming out next month called Poems Plain. And some of them, not surprisingly, are about work. And I thought I'd share with them with you. And I know I hate poetry. You know, I don't understand poetry. I was speaking to another fellow PhD, a brilliant guy who I went to graduate school with. He hates poetry because he doesn't understand it. So I thought, first of all, I wrote poems that were simple, but I also thought, just to be sure, because it's on the radio and we're all listening with one ear on the radio, I'm going to do some explaining up front and then some explaining afterwards so you're not left saying, I don't know what the hell he was talking about. So one of my beliefs is that it saddens me that in America, perhaps worldwide, we tend to idolize our musicians, and I'm a musician, but we idolize musicians, we idolize athletes. There are better people to idolize, and that's what this poem is called. It's called We Need Better Heroes. Because a beast can bust a ball, in other words, can a real strong behemoth can hit a ball far, or clueless crooner, in other words, a lot of these singers are not exactly brain trust, these, or clueless crooner can bawl, they often cry and they get to be appeal to emotions. Even more if PC, in other words, if they are politically correct, say the right kind of things, we exalt, in other words, we exalt them. I'll go repeat that stance again, but this time I won't explain, I'll just say it. Because a beast can bust a ball, or clueless crooner can bawl, even more if PC, we exalt, we honor them. But bunioning them, like Paul Bunyan, really being a giant, bunioning them ever are the worker quiet. I love the quiet worker who does his or her good job without trying to get credit, just quietly does it. So, but bunioning them ever are the worker quiet, the achiever resolute, the true, that is the honest, the true when inexpedient, the owner, most ethical, the business owner, most ethical, the researcher, indefatigable, the clear speaker, felled by woozy wave. In other words, somebody who speaks really well and intelligently, but there is a wave of conventional wisdom that makes him get drowned. The clear speaker felled, F-E-L-L-E-D, by woozy wave, rising to speak again and again. Now I'll read that stanza again. But bunioning them ever are the worker quiet, the achiever resolute, the true when inexpedient, the owner most ethical, the researcher indefatigable, the clear speaker felled by woozy wave, rising to speak again and again. So next you cheer for player of game or of song, get that your list of heroes is wrong. Now I'll just read the whole thing again without stopping from start to finish. It's called We Need Better Heroes. Because a beast can bust a ball, or a clueless crooner can bawl, even more if PC, we exalt. But bunioning them ever are the worker quiet, the achiever resolute, the true when inexpedient, the owner most ethical, the researcher indefatigable, the clear speaker felled by woozy wave, rising to speak again and again. So next you cheer for player of game or of song, get that your list of heroes is wrong. Then I wrote a pair of poems, one about capitalism and one about socialism. Capitalism. Ringing, that is W-R-I-N-G, like ringing as in wringing a towel dry. Ringing crucial war won coin, that is taking away the money that people worked for very hard. Ringing crucial war won coin. Camo ads, camouflaging ads, in other words, deceptive ads, flog the borderline products as must have. I'll read that stanza again. Ringing crucial war won coin, camo ads, flog the borderline as must have. Swarms scurry, sourcing, making, marketing, mini servicing. Thus the world's will waters weeds. In other words, all the effort of the world is watering weeds, even poison oak, more than we water the rose. Next, socialism, I'll propose, also has its woes. Is golden mean the best? Who knows? Now I'll read the socialism one. For if all get basics met, too few will work, let alone grind and grind and grind to create. Hence long lines, bad items, limp minds, and with all that wan, all that sadness, too few, and all that lack of motivation, too few earn enough to pay for everyone, and thus comes dissolution. Answers? I can summon only the classic poetical, the golden mean. So I like to think that's a fair-minded critique of both capitalism and socialism. Again, prioritizing you. Let's go. We have time for a quick call. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Hi, beautifully.
Hi, I'm Eli from San Francisco. I am a land surveyor in training, and my current boss has a great business, small business enterprise, and we have all these fantastic projects where we get to do work at San Francisco International Airport, the cranes in Oakland. And my question is it advisable for me to try to get, I want to get my professional licensure, but should I try to get my own business when I have all these fantastic projects that I get to work on at this job?
Unless you love, you know, if you're very money-centric, then it may be worth you to keep all the profits. If you're really good at bringing in the deals, selling, whatever. But you sound like you're loving the work. I'm just reading between the lines. If you love the work and you don't, you're not too materialistic, even if you have to live in a bad neighborhood so you have to pay little rent or ever, it's generally worth the hassles of running a business, especially a legitimate business where you've got to get permits and licenses and reporting and rules, etc., is you end up not being a surveyor. And a surveyor is one of my very favorite of the apprenticeable trades because it's something you can do forever. You know, if you're a carpenter or an electrician, your knees or you're a tile setter, your knees or your back go bad after you're 40 or 45. Most of them need a career change. Surveyors can work till they're 80. So
yeah.
I think you've chosen a fabulous career. And if you've got a good boss who's got great projects, just be an awesome worker, keep growing and be a hell of a nice guy and look up and thank your lucky stars. What do you think?
I think that's great advice. You're right on the fact that once you own a business, you stop being a surveyor in the sense of like doing the work, doing the actual field work and whatnot. Our boss does not have the chance to do that. He's turned into basically like a like kind of actually a lawyer sometimes because he just has to. Yeah, you know?
Right.
You have to vouch for yourself and.
Yeah, it's
and that's
yucky.
Not what I want to do.
You know, I have a lot of respect for the bosses of the world because they take all the crap and they don't get the pleasure of being, you know, doing. And there are a lot of crap jobs, but being a surveyor is not one. So I think you have been a wise man indeed. And I'm looking at the clock and I've got to thank you for the call, but I'm glad to give you two thumbs up.
All right. I owe it to my dad. He showed me surveying. Thank you.
Right. Hey, very good. And that is Work with Marty Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Calls are great. My God, I am grateful for this new time. The people are still working when they're, you know, they're in their cars commuting, so I'm getting these really interesting work calls. Love it. So please join me again next Thursday at 7. You can call in for a workover. Plus, my wife, Barbara Nemko, is going to tell me why some of the careers that I tout in my new book, Careers for Dummies, are unworthy. Maybe she'll like some. Until then, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.